Hello and welcome to this version of the Timberwolves Territory Breakdown Podcast. Mark Craig from Star Tribune, StarTribuneCod.com. I'm Joe Oberle from Vikings Territory and VikingsTerritory.com. I cannot start this podcast without mentioning the Timberwolves. Right there, baby. There's an OG hat.
What about the Twins? They won seven in a row.
Well, you know, they got time to be in the spotlight, okay? The Timberwolves just did, they just won for the first time in Minnesota sports history. They swept a team in a seven-game series of all sports. First time ever.
Well, it's probably because they'd never go to the playoffs, I would think.
Wow. I can see where you're at. Well, the even more amazing is how many teams do you think there were that got swept by a team in the regular season, which the Timberwolves were by the Suns, and then swept that team in the first round of playoffs?
No idea.
Short list, baby. That's what I figured. And it's one other one. The Wizards did it once to the Raptors, but with the Raptors. So anyway, I'll go back. I'll talk about Vikings because they kind of had a big weekend too. I'll put my Vikings hat on here, but you gotta mention the Howl. I mean, my goodness, they're going on the second round for the second time in their history, and there you go. So maybe all folks didn't tune in for that, but you know,
they already left, Joe. So it's been a good run.
What's that?
They all left already, so Joe. So just me and you talking now.
That's all right. Now the Vikings made some news too. It's a big weekend for Minnesota sports. You mentioned the Twins winning seven in a row, which is nice. But Vikings had their NFL draft carried on last weekend, and it was a big deal. It's probably the most anticipated draft for a long time for Minnesota, and with two first round picks and looking for a quarterback of the future. And Mark, in the first round, they traded. They had to trade up and spend a little capital, but they went up from 11 to 10 and got J.J. McCarthy, a quarterback from the NCAA champion Michigan Wolverines. What did you think of that pick? Pretty big deal for him.
It was, you know, certainly the most anticipated draft in recent memory, maybe ever. Because, you know, they ended it. This is a quarterback, the first time they've ever had taken a quarterback in the top 10. Culpepper was the 11th pick in 99. I like it because, and again, we don't know if McCarthy's going to be a good player or not. We don't know if Dallas Turner is going to be a good player or not. But, you know, right now I like the draft because the anticipation, the feeling was you would have to give up both picks to get a quarterback, to get McCarthy. And they didn't. They did get a little hoodwinked by the Jets and the combination of the Jets and the Broncos to give up. But at that point, I don't blame
hoodwinked them. Baloney.
Well, they were convinced that someone might jump ahead of them and take them. You know, so they did go up one spot. So I'm saying I don't blame them for doing that because there's a billion mock drafts out there, if not more, and I challenge you to find one that would have had Michael Penix going to Atlanta at number 8. So the Vikings, I don't blame them. If McCarthy's the guy that they wanted at that point. And you know, so if you have to give a fourth rounder, I think it was, or whatever it was to move up.
Fourth and a fifth next year, you know, traded a fourth. Yeah, so and they got back a sixth.
To me, if there's any hint, any indication that something would have happened, it's okay with me to go get that guy, get your quarterback, because you're keeping your second number one. That was the key for me was you keep that second one. And then because of the way the draft was, 23 offensive guys in the first round, first 14 in the first round. And Dallas Turner, you know, is to me, I thought he was the best defensive player available in the draft. And you have to trade up to get him. But I like that. I like the aggression to get those two guys at that spot. And so now you gotta sit back and see if it's a good fit, if they end up producing. But I like that they got a quarterback and they didn't have to give up as much as we all thought they would. And then they get a top defender.
And they didn't give up their number one next year, which is huge since they only have three picks now in that draft next year.
Well, they'll get more. I mean, they're gonna
That's big because that's what everybody was anticipating. They would have to give up these first two and maybe even a third first overall to jump up into the top three and maybe get Drake
May. Well, yeah, I'd never once through the whole process did I just, it doesn't make sense. Whenever Bill Belichick loses his job because they don't have a quarterback, Bill Belichick loses the job because they don't have a quarterback, and they're starting a new regime at the best quarterback drafts in maybe ever. Talk about the number of guys available, and you're sitting at number three. You're not trading that pick.
No.
There's no way. I never believed that for a second. I do think that the Vikings like Drake May, you know, as their top guy. They made an effort to do that. Mm-hmm. But then the reality of where you're at and the fact that they didn't tank, like, you know, I'm always talking tanking, Joe. You know, why didn't they tank this? No, but, you know, then the reality of where you're at and what they did with where they're at is pretty good, I thought.
I saw somewhere that if they had lost the 3-0 game against the Raiders last season, they would have gotten the 10th overall pick, and they could have saved those picks. They should have tanked it right there.
If you only had a crystal ball, you know.
That's right. You know, that's one of my questions, you know, was, and it sounds like, you know, you never know what you're to believe in stuff that comes out on Twitter X, but that they gave a whole bunch of, or they offered a whole bunch to New England to go up into the third overall pick, and they even upped it on the, you know, when the Patriots were on the clock. So that tells me that maybe they were trying to get Drake made. And here all along, J.J. McCarthy's telling anybody that would listen that he wants to be a Viking. And, you know, should he be upset by that? Because they waited until the 10th pick to get him?
No, because, I mean, the draft is there for a reason. There's a pecking order. The Vikings tried to jump the pecking order to get a guy, you know, that was the third overall pick that you know, New England tried to make, I suppose, it look like there was a possibility they're going to jump out. I mean, you always set, you know, ask for the moon, you know, and see if somebody actually gives it to you. But they were never going to come out of that. It took some patience on the Vikings part, because I was out at Joe Alt's draft party, and when it came up to five, I mean, I think everyone was expecting the Vikings to, you know, some noise there, and it was about 5, 6, 7 minutes in before he got the call. So the Vikings were probably talking to him. You know, there's something out there, and that they, you know, tried to trade for Justin Herbert and stuff like that. You know, just things that, you know, we make a lot of big deal about because we think it might come true, but it's just, they're always throwing things out there. That's, you know, the negotiation starts at something ridiculous and it ends up in the middle. If you even have an agreement. So just like last year when Kirk got hurt, you know, O'Connell, he calls Tom Brady and says, what do you think? And then Tom Brady probably takes a look at their interior offensive line and says, I don't want them around my 46-year-old legs. So, so you ask for a lot, but where they, how they negotiated and everything, I was impressed by, because it's not, you know, 2 years ago we're sitting here and me and a lot of other people, I'm sure, were questioning what in the world did he do going from 12, where all those great prospects were, down to 32, not really getting a whole lot, enough back in return. I like him going the other way. I like him reaching, you know, going up to get two guys that can really help them.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I really applaud Kwesi for his patience and for his, I think he had a number in mind that they were not going to go any, you know, throw any more at New England to try to get Drake. They're going to, you know, take their swing at the plate. And if he's not going to get it, fine. We'll see what comes our way. They did move up one spot, so that's got to be nice for McCarthy that at least they moved up for him to make sure they got him. That says a little bit about that. But so I like the way Kwesi did handle. He's gotten certainly a lot of grief for his drafts in the past. And for this first round, I couldn't be happier. Later in the draft, it's not quite as good because he didn't have the capital, but you still got to give him good grades. Clearly the Vikings were McCarthy's team. it remains to see. I think they did like May, but I think they will like McCarthy. What do you see at his strengths or weaknesses, and is he a good fit for this team, for this offense?
Yeah, and I think all this about, you know, how does McCarthy feel about them not trading to five or not thinking of him as their – first of all, the assumption is that, you know, that May is their guy. But, you know, they're at 11. New England's at 3. He's not going to be rattled. My instinct is he doesn't get rattled. If you're picking a quarterback who's going to be rattled and upset about stuff like that, yeah, you picked the wrong guy. This
and
guy.
He did say to O'Connell that he would wait for 2 days for them to get him. He wanted to be.
Yeah, I like the guy. Number one, you know, I don't care that he only averaged 22 passes a game. That to me is something that you know. So what? If you look at how he played. The biggest moments in that national championship game, I was like, well, McCarthy might not be a runner. It's third and long or whatever. I'm trying to remember the details of that national championship game. But as an Ohio State guy, I'm kind of rooting against the Buckeyes or yeah. rooting against the Wolverines. And I'm thinking, okay, here you go, pin him in. And then he took off, got a first down, made a great throw. In big moments, he was there. I mean, and it throughout, he's three, I went, what, state in high school, three state championship. Went to the games, 27-1 at Michigan. The fact that he averaged 22 passes a game if he averaged 22 passes a game and was a 40% completion percentage, that would bother me. But yeah. He's completing 73% of his passes in his career there, 68% of his passes. He's not a cannon. He's not Drake May in his cannon arm, but he can make all the throws. Kirk Cousins wasn't a cannon arm, but Kirk can make any throw you want. His strengths are his moxie, his ability, you know, team player, ability to, you know, do what it takes to win, big in the big moments, stuff like that. And he can make all the throws. So, you know, what the weaknesses would be that he's going to need a year to, you know, get a little thicker and get a bigger NFL type body. He just turned 21, I guess.
Yeah.
And him liking the Vikings, I totally understand that. I mean, my goodness, he's coming in with Justin Jefferson. He's coming in with T.J. Hockenson. He's got two good tackles. Be a little leery about the interior of the offensive line, but there's no pressure to him to step in. I do think he will, because I don't see Sam Darnold changing our opinions about Sam Darnold. So I think this McCarthy will be a starter by the end of the year, but the pressure on him having to start like say a Caleb Williams in Chicago. I mean, if he doesn't start day one, it's like the doubts are already start turning. But and he's got McCown, he's got O'Connell. So yeah, it's a good, real good situation for him.
He's also a hockey guy, and he wants to come to Minnesota because it's the state of hockey, and it's also the state of the Timberwolves. Whoops, sorry. There we go.
He's making sure to like Kirk's opening press conference in Atlanta got them in hot water. So this guy coming in, he hasn't like docked him any draft picks or hurt him in any way. So he was a good. I didn't listen to all of it, but.
Okay, that's twice. You've compared him to Kirk twice. That's all you get. No more. We'll talk about Kirk later, but we're not comparing this guy to Kirk anymore.
We don't like him anymore.
the thing he does have over Kirk is he's won some titles in his career now, and one of them's a national championship. You got to give him credit for that. I think you said it really well. It's not how many times you get to pass the ball; it's what you do when you get the opportunity. And ultimately, that's what all any athlete can do. Whatever opportunity they have, if Harbaugh is not calling pass plays every time, because that's not what the offense calls for, well, then that's what you do. But if you win with what you're given, you can't criticize it, you know.
And look at what he did when they needed him. You know, again, when I would watch him, you know, Ohio State game, national championship game. There's other people rooting more against him at that point, but it's like, come on, you know, you just wanted, you know, them, and he stepped up. And it's a pro-style offense. There's a reason Jim Harbaugh wins wherever he wants. You know, he's not the most likable guy in the world, but he gets big offensive linemen. He beats people up. His quarterback makes plays. You know, it's a football team, more of what Harbaugh has. It's not, you know, you weren't going to throw it 40 times a game. And so that doesn't
Mark,
mean
you mentioned pro-style offense. Isn't that just another feather in McCarthy's cap that he's already kind of played in that? And
yeah, I think it's a huge feather in his cap to be having, you know, to have it played under Harbaugh, having, you know, when he came into Michigan, Michigan was getting drummed every year by Ohio State. And, you know, the kid's a winner. He's got a good, you don't look at him. And again, Caleb Williams might end up being a Hall of Famer. I don't know. But you know, when you look at it, just, there's a feeling about Caleb Williams. You're like, does he love it? You know, and I get, and again, this is just a gut instinct, but I like where McCarthy's, I see him coming in as soon as he can and spending as much as he can and absorbing as much as he can. And again, I think he'll be the starter. They won't expect it of him, but I think he will be the starter by the end of the season.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm very excited about him being here because, like you said, the Vikings have never drafted a quarterback in the top 10. That alone is worth getting excited for in this part of the NFL. But you got another guy. I'm really happy with the pick. But they also made moves to get another first rounder. There are people that had Dallas edge rusher Dallas Turner at, you know, as high as eighth in the draft. And you said he's, was it one of the top defenders in the draft? That's what you felt?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people had him going to, because, you know, the assumption was you were going to put, you know, more, because the Falcons have been 7-10 like 3 years in a row. You know, either get Kirk an offensive weapon, like of all those receivers, like seven receivers went in the first round, get Kirk one of those guys, or get Kirk a defensive guy that can, you know, help you that way. And people were thinking that Dallas Turner would go, you know, number eight to the Falcons, but it just became an offensive craziness of 14 in a row, which we've never seen before. And that just pushed guys like Byron Murphy too. They could have taken Byron. Well, they got up to 17, 16. The Seattle took Byron Murphy too. As a defensive tackle, that would have been fantastic for the Vikings. Turner's going to be is a really good pick because by the nature of everybody going receiver, tackle, quarterback, you know, some really, really good top 10 caliber guys slid down the board. And I give credit because, you know, Turner would not have sat there another six right. picks for the no Vikings. Way. So, no and you look at what happened, you lose. You know, you lose your top three. Well, not, you know, I'll put Marcus Davenport as I have a hard time putting him as your top three defender, but yeah, you know, you lose Daniil, you lose Wonum, Marcus Davenport's gone. You know, and you went out and got guys, but you still needed more. And guy that is a kind of a physical freak, he'll need to get, I think, a little bigger. I don't think he's, you know, Will Anderson Jr. came out last year, what, fourth overall, third or fourth overall? I think it was third. You know, the Texans traded up and he became defensive rookie of the year. I think he was a little more physically advanced than this, or NFL ready. But that doesn't mean this guy won't be that type of player. He looks pretty good, and he's, you know, SEC defensive player of the year. You know, he looks like a guy that if you're gonna see something and go, hey, we have the ability to go up and get him six spots up, I think you do it.
yeah, they've got, you know, they've got to be set at edge now. I mean, ultimately, McCarthy replaces the departure of Kirk Cousins. And so now you got Dallas Turner, who will eventually replace the departure of Danielle Hunter. I think that's huge. That's their two biggest losses this past year. And the Vikings went out and got somebody to replace him. You know, they also got Van Ginkel. They got another edge rusher. I can't think of his name.
Grenard. I mean, he's
Grenard, yes.
He's the immediate replacement.
How soon do you think before Dallas Turner is in the rotation? It's got to be pretty.
Oh, immediately.
immediately.
He's okay. Immediately in the rotation. It's just a matter of when is he your starter? Is he your starter early on? You know what's good about all this is they do have, you know, Flores and his the mind of Brian Flores is going to put all of these guys to use, because as you saw last year, a lot of it was for lack of not having a down lineman, but a lot of edge rushers would come in on third down and they'd be in interior guys. And, Van Ginkel is a guy that, you know, has played in Flores' system. So it's, you know, he knows how he wants to use him. He's going to have multiple roles, sort of like a Josh Metellus has in the back end. So, you know, Dallas Turner comes in and helps you immediately. If he doesn't, then something's wrong. But he should come in as some sort of a situational pass rusher at the very least.
When you consider what the Vikings traded away to get up to get that second first rounder at 23 and then traded up to 17 to get him, it was pretty penny they spent. Was it too much, Mark?
I don't think so, because the initial trade, second to get up into the first round, was to set themselves up for the quarterback. They probably were assuming that they were going to have to use that to get one guy. All right. So then they don't need to do that. So then you have that, trading up to, they would not have accepted the 42 or whatever they had to go up and get Dallas Turner. So that 43 right. was valuable in that regard. And then the third and fourth of next year they have to give up.
Yeah.
I think we have to remember that, the Vikings lost two of the bigger names in football. Kirk Cousins would be the primary one in football and free agency that you lose. So you're looking at getting at least, and I don't know if you get multiple ones for one guy that you lose, but, I would assume at the minimum you get 2 third-round picks for losing Daniil, losing Kirk. And then if Brian Flores – if they win the Super Bowl on, you're going to have a hard time saying goodbye to Brian Flores, but if he gets a head coaching job, that's more compensatory picks because of the way the NFL is set up.
It's exciting. It's a lot to spend. It's a lot to give up, but it's like they were making moves on the fly. And I don't think you have to go any further than the look on Kevin O'Connell's face when Kwesi tells him they got Dallas Turner. I mean, it's been a meme all over Twitter. I'm just going, woohoo. So I'm sure Vikings fans are doing the same thing. I think that's exciting to get someone that's going to be that impactful on your defense. It might not be day one, but it might be day two and from then on. So it's going to be exciting for the team. You got to be, if you're Brian Flores, you got to be pumped about getting a guy like that for sure, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, by having him hit year two of Flores, I think Kwesi and Flores' influence on that side of the ball. You talk about, they did lose a lot of guys. Daniil, losing Daniil hurts, but to having a guy like Flores target Grenard and Van Ginkel and now Dallas Turner. There's a sense there that and we'll talk about the other guy that was a pretty big draft pick, I think, is the cornerback that they took. Having Flores' influence in that and what Flores wants to do that he couldn't do last year because he didn't have the horses to do it makes you feel better about the draft, I think.
All right. Well, Mark needs a break. He's got, his voice is shot from cheering on the Wolves last night. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to break down some more of the Vikings draft on Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay. Welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. We spent the first part of this podcast talking about the first round for the Vikings. And before we leave that discussion, I just need to say, once a douche, always a douche. But Sean Payton trying to claim credit for, as you said, hoodwinking the Vikings into moving up to draft McCarthy one spot. I think it was a good thing to do. I think Sean Payton is just like a pebble in our shoe in Minnesota. It's like, you were trolling us then, you were trolling us this time, and look what that did for you. Well, you got Bo Nix, have at him, Sean Payton, with George Patton just sitting right next to him. He's trolling the Vikings, you know. I just tell you, it's like, I have no love lost for that guy for me.
Well, I mean, you know, Sean Payton is a guy that, you know, one of his best wins of his career was, you know, beating the Vikings in the NFC Championship game. But obviously what that led to, not, you know, getting suspended for a year. So the Vikings have always had a little talk about a pebble in your shoe. I mean, he looks at the Vikings as a pebble in his shoe because of the, you know, Bounty Gate.
Boulder.
And then the Miracle at Metrodome Miracle, whatever, Minnesota Miracle. And then, Zim going down there and upsetting him in 2019,
yeah,
in that game. And, you know, Kyle Rudolph having the – was it a push-off? Was it not a push-off? So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a back and forth with him, with the Vikings for whatever reason. And, but, you know, I do believe that Bo Nix was his guy all along. And
you do? So, do you?
Yeah, I don't think he was – I mean, my impression is that he was – you know, and if it was McCarthy, then, you know – I'm not, you know, it's hard to tell what the actual truth is with these guys when they talk, but the feeling is that, you know, I don't think that you, if he didn't like Nix, you just take him, you know, there. Bo Nix, you know, now that's really the only comparison to me that this will be. It'll be a Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy. And if Bo Nix becomes great and J.J. McCarthy doesn't, then obviously Kwesi will hear it. But if Drake May is great, and J.J. McCarthy is, and you can't say, well, they should have traded up for him.
Yeah. Because well, they will.
You know, that they have to, like, you can't make New England do something they don't want to do, or right, or the chart, you know, anybody.
Along these lines, Mark, what were the Falcons doing? I mean, explain that to me. I think that surprised everybody, you know. I think the Vikings certainly gave some consideration to Penix at quarterback when they were looking at him. I think they had him in. I don't know what they thought of him or if they would have taken him. But I think that really surprised everybody. And that had more to do with the Vikings moving up to secure McCarthy than anything Sean Payton did.
Well, in a what was an atypical, predictable draft. I mean, it's so predictable that I got 10 right, Joe. 10 right. And I'm going to say 10 and a half because I did have him taking McCarthy. I just had him trading up to number 5 to get him.
Okay.
But, you know, it was predictable. The first four, I had the first four. I had number 6. I had number 9. I did have Bo Nix to the Broncos. And then I had Penix going 13 to the Raiders. So amid, you know, kind of went, okay, that makes sense. But at number 8, it was like, whoa, you know, this is now we got a draft, you know. And that's where I would say that played into a role into the Vikings. It's like, hey, there's only 2 guys left, and the Raiders are sitting there, the Broncos are sitting there.
Yep.
I don't care if I got fooled by Sean Payton or whatever. If McCarthy's the guy I wanted, and I'm still thinking, hey, I still got my number 23 pick. I don't care. I'm going to get him. I'm going to secure it. And we, you know, because we don't know what's going to happen with 2 more quarterbacks on the board and the fact that the Falcons did that. And as far as the Falcons, you know, initially I was on the board with the, you know, that's got to be the dumbest pick ever. But it sort of warming up to it when you look at a team that, you know, they finished 7-10, I think 3 or 4 years in a row. They've lost coaches because they don't have a quarterback. You know, Matt Ryan got old on them and it was done. And, you know, they struggled so much at quarterback and had talent. You know, defense was pretty good for those 3 years. And then, you know, offensively, they had a lot of talent, a lot of pieces. They just didn't have a quarterback. So what they did was, so, okay, we're going to get our quarterback of now, or we're going to get our quarterback of the future.
Yeah, they did.
They did kind of what – they did exactly what the Vikings wanted to do.
Right.
The Vikings did not want to pay the amount of money that they paid. So there's a lot of things that could go wrong with this. Number one being if Kirk goes off to a slow start and then you just have this swirling of when's Penix going to play and why is Kirk playing. You know, Kirk's probably been around the block enough times to be able to function in that type of situation. But, you know, there also is the fact of, you know, Kirk was obviously, as it's been reported, was dumbfounded himself. There's so many guys that they could have had. That's going to be hard for Falcons fans to digest. Is like, you could have had all, you know, any number of, you know, these receivers. You could have had the tight end. You could have had a lot of really good pieces to help Kirk. And obviously Penix doesn't help Kirk in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Mark, you congrats on getting so many in the first round, but how did you miss number five? I mean, you were in Joel's pocket for a week, for crying out loud. Every time I turn around, I said I was going to send you a text and say, are they going to get another Joel story out of you?
We got a, you know, him working out before the draft. We got a news one, kind of a quick one. With newspaper deadlines, Joe. And then the other one was the kind of the bigger picture one. That surprised everybody at that party was because, you know, it's funny because the Chargers, one needed a tackle, but they needed a right tackle. Tennessee needed a tackle, but they took a, but they needed, oh, it's Tennessee needed a left tackle. So Tennessee or the Chargers end up taking Joe Ault, who's their left, he's a great left tackle. And he's going to have to start out on the right side, at least initially in his career, whereas Tennessee ended up taking the Alabama kid, who, and they're going to have to, you know, they need a left tackle. So I don't know if that kid moves over to left tackle. So, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it was a great job by Harbaugh identifying the absolute best offensive lineman in the draft and taking him and figuring that, you know, whether he ends up at left tackle eventually, who cares? But now we got two, you know, number one draft picks at tackle, and this is how Jim Harbaugh becomes Jim Harbaugh. Success starts with the offensive line, and yeah. One of his the best quote I saw from him was because people in Los Angeles that follow the Chargers, it was like, oh, why didn't you get a weapon? We lost these receivers, and we, you know, we need receivers, we need weapons. And he said, you know, we consider offensive linemen weapons because, you know, we want to do things that, you know, that take over games. And the offensive lineman is the tip of the spear of the, all those weapons. And so I feel like Joe Ault is going to be a really good pick for me, a really good player. They were thinking, and Joe Ault was in, he even told, was saying about how he thought Tennessee was the best fit for him, thinking he was going there. Yeah. But Harbaugh basically had some interest at the combine and then shut it down and to make sure that nobody, because the Giants had him in for a visit. You know, they're sitting at number six. He took out any possibility of like the Giants jumping up. The Jets also had Joe Ault in. So they, you know, kept it quiet. And I'm sitting there talking to the agent, and the agent is telling me at 7 o'clock is the draft starting that, you know, it looks like it's going to be Tennessee. And it's like, so that's how little the, you know, sometimes how close to the vest the NFL teams play it because of everybody on the, especially all the way up until the draft saying, you know, is there anything we can glean or to get any kind of information about where guys are going? And that was a bit of a surprise. It wasn't like a shock that, you know, Chargers are took this great offensive lineman, but still a little bit of a shock.
I just got to put in a personal plug. He's hails from Totino Grace High School, where my three kids went to school. And he's the second Totino Grace Eagle to make it to the pros in recent memory. There was a running back who went to who played with Carson Wentz up in North Dakota. And he was in the Packers for maybe for a cup of coffee, I think. But just real quickly, what was that like? Was that a new experience for you to be at a gathering like that where someone was getting drafted, you know, into the NFL? What was it? Was it fun to be there? And what was that like?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, like Alex Boone is there. Marcus Freeman, head coach of Notre Dame, is there. A lot of high school coaches that coached him. His agent, his dad, obviously, his dad, you know, was a great guy, you know, played 13 years in the NFL. He was, you know, we were joking. I said, there's Mel Kiper. And it's like Mel Kiper's first draft was when you were drafted in 1984, you know? So, and he was like, yeah, he goes, things have changed. He goes, I know the money's changed a lot. And, you know, I mean, 1984 is still a lot of money. John Ault's got like $750,000 signing bonus. Joe Alt's signing bonus is going to be north of $21 million.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and John was the first round pick, number 21. He got beat by 16 shots by his son because he was a 21st overall pick in 84. But yeah, it was fun to be there. It's, you see how it's, how the sausage is made a little bit for the TV. It's like he went into the other room and you can, there's a window there. So you can see when they got the call and then they bring them back in and then they set them up, you know, cause it, and then the impression on TV is that, this is when they're finding out, you know, and
yeah.
So they come in and when they cut to him, then everybody erupts and everything. And I think some people online were picking on his girlfriend, poor girl. You know, she's a junior at Drake. She came up for the draft. You know, so she's probably, what, 20 years old, 21 at the oldest. And people are saying, look at her face. Reading into the fact that, you know, that Joe didn't want to go to the Chargers or whatever. And so, yeah, she's there. And she might have had one of the better quotes. She was like, I said, you know, where's Joe going in your mock draft? She goes, I don't pay attention to mock drafts. They don't seem real reliable to me. I said, yeah, smart girl.
Yes.
And then she said, well, why can't we just wait till tonight and find out? I'm like, good question. Well,
good for Joe. I mean, that's great. It was a nice story to follow, and I enjoyed reading your stuff. I want to ask you, you know, all kinds of trade. I mean, Kwesi is, if he's marked by anything in his short tenure here, it's he's not afraid to pull the trigger on trades during draft day. I mean, he's been all over the map in all three of them now. And I guess Mel Kiper is giving the Vikings a C+. We can talk about our grades later, but because they didn't have much, he gave up so much and they're mortgaging their future or whatever. But it seems to me Kwesi doesn't, you know, value picks the way other guys do. And he's an analytics guy. And the greatest quote from him, I thought all weekend, was, you know, even as an analytics guy, says you got to put away the charts if your gut tells you that it's worthwhile going to get a player that's going to impact your team. And that's what he did with Dallas Turner. What do you think his philosophy is about the draft? Because it is, you know, even while we always had Trader Rick, Kwesi is not afraid to move up and down the board at
Rams. Well, my guess would be he's been impacted greatly by that first draft of his. You know the quote that you just used about sometimes you've got to like use your gut and see and value the player there as opposed to, you know, trading down and getting more. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd much rather quote unquote mortgage the future and go up and get a great player than I would to get a bunch of picks and have Lewis Seen sitting on my bench for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, we'll find out. And I do think they'll get some compensatory picks. And you can trade compensatory picks now, which is, makes them even more valuable. C plus is pretty low. I mean, that's generally when you look at draft grades, all you see are A's and B's and
right.
A's and nobody gets like a D or an F anymore. So yeah, that's probably, I haven't seen it, but that's, Mel Kiper's got all that information still in his head.
It's in his hair.
About what they could have had. He's probably, you know, looking at just how many cornerbacks came off the board from, and that second day when the Vikings are, you know, it's hard to, I think teams that sit for an entire day without making a pick are probably not, you know, are going to get dinged a little bit on some of the draft grades.
Of course.
Because totally there's so many corners coming off the board and, you know, things like that. So, but, I don't know what I don't, thank God I don't have to give a grade, but I do like what they did.
You know, one more interesting thing from Kwesi, he said people asked him about JJ. Now it's time to sign him and Justin Jefferson, because now we have two JJs. And we learned also that Justin goes by Jets and JJ McCarthy will get to be JJ. So Paul Allen will have to make that change.
Good to know.
It is. Mark that down. But Kwesi said, you know, he didn't, you know, they, and I get this, you can't just be focusing totally on Jefferson while you got the draft going on because there's too many things going, but he said he wanted to give Jefferson his own week to sign. So it sounds like we could expect that coming soon, the Jefferson signing extension time, you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's like Jeff, Diamond was saying last year, it's not an urgency, nothing to be really alarmed about right now. But I do think the earlier the better, because if you get him here, the earlier he comes in, the more he starts working with, with not only J.J. McCarthy, but, Sam Darnold, the earlier the better.
Yeah.
You'd want him here, I would hope, by mini camp. But yeah, to me, that's a deal. It's like each time, the farther it goes, the more you get a little concerned, because it's like, but I feel like it's way too early to get too alarmed about it.
Yeah. Well, then on that note, we'll take another quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the rest of the draft for the Vikings. They grabbed five players on the way out, and we'll see what Mark Craig has to think and say about it. So come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, Vikings did not have any players to any draft picks on second day with the second and third round, so we had to move to the day three where they pick 108 in the fourth round. They took Kyree Jackson, a cornerback from Oregon. He's 6'3", 195 pounds, and he's a tall corner. I think he's got pretty decent speed. I think I saw 4.540 at the combine, which isn't great, but I guess long arms. So he's a guy that will help them in this this ever improving NFC North division, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's a 6'4" corner. There's only one other corner in the Denver had a guy who was 6'4", I think, at one time. Forget his name, but probably one of the biggest, longest corners you'll ever see. I mean, and you got to look at where they took him. Detroit's first two picks were two corners. They traded up and got the number one cornerback. And then they, at 61, they got another cornerback. Like the second and third rounds, there were a lot of corners that came off the board. So I'm sure there's guys that went that would be a better pick than what this guy is. But I think at four, when you're coming back and you spent a lot of capital to get your quarterback, to get your edge rusher, this was a guy that I feel like, fits what, what Brian Flores wants to do is be able to play, more man coverage, more press coverage, more just getting after guy teams a little more than having to piece it together with a bunch of zones and stuff. So this guy's he can be a mauler. So he's a good pick for the fourth round, I think. He's going to be turning 25. I don't know that he's that to me would be a little bit of a concern, especially if you were taking him in the first round or something. But where he's at and what else is available, I think he'll be a pretty good pick. In fact, I think he'll, this is not going out on a big limb, but he's going to jump ahead of Andrew Booth, probably jump ahead of Caleb Evans. Caleb will be a little harder to jump ahead of, but a Caleb Evans is also a guy with talent who got benched in Brian Flores' defense twice last year. Mekhi Blackmon is another young guy coming into his second year. So, I could definitely see, and they want to move Byron Murphy into the slot because he had to play on the outside too much last year. Mm-hmm. Now you have Griffin that you got in free agency. If you had this fourth rounder come in and start, and Murphy or Caleb Evans, there's more to work with. I still feel like, and I think Jeff might have mentioned it last week, of them, probably needing to go out and getting another veteran corner, I think.
It's a crowded room already, and there's some of them are going to be taking off their purple jersey, I think, by the end of this. But that seems like plenty to work with for Brian Flores. With pick 177 in the sixth round, the Vikings selected Oklahoma offensive tackle Walter Rous. Was a backup tackle surprise at this point? Is he the best player available, or did they need some depth at tackle?
Well, yeah, David Quisenberry is an underrated backup. He's the guy they brought in last year, been around forever. They brought him in to be your swing tackle. But he's going to be turning, I think he's turning 34 in August. And, you know, if he were to break down or not, you know, be as good as he was as a backup last year, I think he made four starts last year. You need to be thinking, you know, because if you can't count on tackles anymore playing 17 games and every snap. I mean, Darisaw has a history of missing a couple games here and there. Brian O'Neill, same thing, occasionally missing games. So you need that. And you also need him for the future. You need, because Quisenberry, you're thinking, okay, one more year. They re-signed him 1 year, like, you know, a little bit over $1 million. So to me, that's not – at this point, when you take a guy like that, you are looking – especially when they went out in free agency and got 14 guys, kind of filling some holes. When you get down to where you pick this guy, you are looking for the best player. You're not looking to fill just grabbing a guy because of his position, I don't think.
Okay. Also in the sixth round, this one sends some shockwaves around, too, with pick 203 in round six, the Vikings selected Will Richard. A kicker from Alabama. He set a couple school records with 86 kicks made and 10 kicks of 50 yards or more. And as you and I have speculated in one of these previous things, that we thought they might take a kicker at some point, maybe pick one up in undrafted free agency, but they spent a sixth rounder on him, and it was the first kicker off the board. What are your thoughts on that selection, Mark?
Well, it didn't surprise me at all. In fact, you know, one of my responsibilities on Saturday was to do the quick wrap-ups of each pick in the sixth round. So I had those two guys. And when they took Rouse, a guy that, you know, by the way, I forgot to mention, I think he started like, you know, 56 games at Stanford and then in Oklahoma. So, you know, tremendous amount of experience there for that guy. But when I wrote about him, saying, so, you know, wrote something quick, I'm like, with other needs at, you know, guard, defensive tackle, and by the way, don't forget kicker, I said they went and got a backup left tackle. So then the next pick was the kicker. And to me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, John Parker Romo, you know, he played in the XFL, but he was an undrafted guy in 2022. So he's had 2 years of trying to make a team, couldn't make it. He has no NFL experience. You have no experience at kicker. So why not get the best one coming out of college? And if you say, well, they could have waited. If they like this guy the most of the three who were drafted, they had to pick him there because all three guys were picked within nine spots.
Yeah.
So the kicker run was right there where they got that first guy. So, yeah, I don't know if he's going to be a good kicker or not, but I like the fact that, you know, and hell, I'd probably go out and bring in a veteran guy just to get into camp with too. But you know, they need a kicker. You know, they need a kicker every bit as much as they needed a quarterback, or maybe more, because, you know, this league, every week we're talking about one score games and, you know, how many games, record number of 3-point games and 7-point games. And so, yeah, they needed a kicker, and I give them credit for taking one.
Moved on to the seventh round, and with pick 230, the Vikings took Wake Forest center Michael Jurgens. He's listed as center, but does he have any flexibility? Can he play guard?
You know, I think he's a guy that probably is going to end up at center. He doesn't appear to be a guy that could play guard, but, you know, I have no idea. But, I mean, typically when they look at a guy like that, they probably are looking around. But, yeah, they do need you know, Feeney is a guy that came in as a backup center / compete at guard. If Feeney ends up beating, and say Blake Randall at guard, you are going to need a backup center. Now you really wouldn't want to have to come down to a late day three guy as starting in any way, shape, or form. So he's a project, but he's also a guy that I think he had 40 some career starts. So, you know, experienced guy. But a project, you know, a project at that point.
Is it time now for the Vikings to go out and sign Dalton Risner before he gets away?
You know, possibly. I don't, if by him not being signed now, by him not being signed last year, my feeling is that he really overprices himself. You know, he was good. He wasn't great. But yeah, it, I guess I'd feel better with him in there, but I also, I don't understand all the, you know, the pieces of how they all fit together. If I was Rob Brzezinski, I'd be able to answer that. You know, what can we give this guy? What turns over all the apple carts whenever you give him that, and then all of a sudden you got to give this guy that and this guy that and this guy that. But yeah,
I'd like to see him sign him before they get going with off-season stuff, because I figure if they wait longer and longer until they need him, then he can just have him over a barrel and they got to pay whatever he's willing to take. You know, get him in there and sign him, I guess.
I think they make those decisions. In fact, you know, Chris Reed is a backup guy that was a pretty good backup, and he broke his foot last spring, and he's working out with Joe Alt and Alex Boone over at that the training house at TCO. And, you know, he's hoping that the Vikings or someone else give him a chance to come to camp. So possibility you could see a guy like that too, you know. But, yeah, I think I'm not real comfortable with that interior line. You know, there's just a lot of needs and a lot of holes you had to fill, and can't do everything all at once. But, yeah, I wouldn't object to Dalton Risner being brought back in. Sure.
Doesn't matter about the interior offense. And we got J.J. McCarthy. He can get out and throw on the run and do whatever it takes. He can move more than old Kirky can.
Kirk could move. He just didn't
move. He didn't move, but he always chose not to. He didn't like moving. He likes to sit back there and make that final decision and then get sacked and fumble and, tear his ACL or his Achilles. No, I'm just kidding. I like Kirk, but – he's not here anymore. Final pick of the draft for the Vikings was pick 232 in the seventh round, and they took Texas A&M defensive tackle Levi Drake Rodriguez. That was a position of need. You've said it. You beat that drum for a long time here, and they didn't address it till their last pick. What are your thoughts, Mark?
Well, I mean, he's a former NAIA guy in Texas A&M Commerce. It's not the, you know, he's a small school guy that he sounded pretty entertaining in his press conference. So maybe that, give him that. But yeah, again, at that point, it's a project. You're hoping you find an athlete that you can, you know, get something out of. And if I'm him, I'd be ecstatic coming to this team, because, you know, the possibilities of making the team are pretty good, are better than you would think with a typical seventh rounder.
Did I think the Vikings picked up 14 undrafted? Was it 14 or 17 undrafted free agents after the draft? The only one that I think stood out to me, but I'll ask you that question, was the UCLA edge rusher Gabriel Murphy. Any what do you think of him, or has anybody else there grab your fancy?
You know, I don't know. Like Ivan Pace last year was a guy that you kind of knew because of how decorated he was in college, and you. You know, thought that why wouldn't someone take him at least in the seventh round? Mm-hmm. But there's nobody like that. They did the North Carolina tackle. What's his name? You got that list there?
Oh, North Carolina.
Yeah, it was a kid from Apple Valley.
No, I don't have the list in front of me. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh, I forget his name. But
it's too much.
Apple Valley and played at North Carolina. He played with Drake May. So. When they bring an offensive lineman, you look at, you know, could be practice squad guys, could be someone that, you know, if he can play on the interior, you know, at some point the Vikings, you know, that's a weakness that, you know, and I know that they invested a second round pick and Ed Ingram does have durability, but to me that those three inside have been shaky for a long time.
There was, I saw somebody say it online somewhere that the Vikings also brought in another Alabama guy, and I don't know if we're talking about the kicker. It's not. It must be an undrafted free agent who was somebody that Lewis Cine knew, and so Lewis Cine has always kind of been on the outside out at TCO, and this is going to maybe make him feel more comfortable or something.
If you need that, if he needs that, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, I like to throw for Marcus. He'll knock it out.
And you do feel about, you know, you do feel bad for a guy like Lewis Cine, because it's not, yep. He didn't pick himself at 32.
Right.
You know, and he didn't, you know, so I don't think his career is over. But I do feel like it sure is trending toward him having to go somewhere else. for it to work.
You know, and that's interesting because the position of safety, you got Harrison Smith sitting out there who's on his last legs and very possibly his last season. And you've got other players that can play coming up behind him. But, you know, if at the top you got him who's not going to be there in 2025 and you got Lewisine who's probably not, that's going to be a position of need going forward, I think.
Well, I mean, I would assume this is Harrison's last year.
Yeah.
I would if I was like sitting down with Flores, I'd be like, hey, we don't want to get, if we've kept Lewisine this long, let's try and get him ready so that at the very least, there's an attempt to make him something in 2025. But who knows what contract, we'll have the contracts and everything. We don't know, but it's just say in that 2022 draft, it's not like we're looking back and saying, it's easy to look back and say it was terrible, but I remember sitting here talking about it 2 years ago and saying, what are we missing here? I don't get it.
Right. Andrew Ruth better be knowing that he's on notice as well from that draft. There's a lot of drafts. So I mentioned Mel Kiper gave him a C+ because he says they mortgage their future. I personally would say a B+ because, it was tough not selecting in the rounds 2 and 3 and only the one pick in four. For four rounds, they had one pick there, which was kind of tough in the middle of the draft. But overall, I thought at the top end they did great, so I would give them a B+. If you were to give them a grade, what do you think they did so far?
I don't like giving A's, because I feel like everyone gives A's. I don't think I would give lower than a B- because I like the fact that they got a quarterback and didn't have to give up that second pick. That to me is huge.
Yeah.
So I'd probably B-. In the B- range, just because I got to offset that with the fact that they did sit there on day two and you got nothing. So, but they also used that capital to do some really good things in the first round. So, B-.
Maybe we'll talk about this in a future time, but the Lions, Packers and Bears, oh my, they also did some decent things in the draft and it'll be coming to a game near you very soon, some of those players. So we may leave that for another time. But I guess that'll do it for us for today. Mark, thanks for your insights. And thanks for, showing us all, writing all those stories and telling us what's going on with the draft. We sure appreciate it. Mike Woldum, thanks for producing. Good luck to your daughter who's having some teeth pulled today. You're in the dentist's office, so and remotely taking care of us. Thanks, Joe Johnson. And thanks to everybody for tuning in. We sure appreciate it. We'll be back next week to talk more about these picks. And as they start having off-season programs, we'll be reporting on that. So tune back. So until that time, I just want to say skull and howl, okay? Let's go, Timberwolves.
Skull.